This Janet Meffer Today podcast is sponsored by Preborn. We want to save 300 babies' lives by giving their moms free ultrasounds, and you can help. Your gift of $140 will give free ultrasounds to five young women. Please help by calling 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or go to preborn.com.
This is Janet Meffer Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffer.
Thank you so much for joining us again. Well, we are going to tackle a very important issue on today's broadcast, and that is interreligious dialogue with Islamists. Now, in the last several weeks, there has been a growing controversy over an interreligious dialogue that actually took place several months ago between Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries and Dr. Yasser Qadhi, who is Dean of Academic Affairs at Al Maghrib Institute, as well as a resident scholar of the Memphis Islamic Center. Now, if you've listened to me on the radio for any length of time, you know that I have interviewed Dr. White many times over the last several years. He is a very smart man. He has written some great Christian books that I have found to be very, very helpful. But I have to admit that as more and more people are weighing in on this particular controversial dialogue that occurred in Memphis, I do have some very serious concerns about what happened there, which is why I wanted to do this show. And primarily, I wanted to address it because of the dangers of interreligious dialogue from both a biblical and a civilizational perspective. I think we need to delve into why this one dialogue matters in the greater context of understanding the threat that Islamism poses to the church today. Now, one of the writers who has been following this recent flap is my next guest, Jim Simpson. Jim is an economist, a businessman, and an investigative journalist. We have talked with Jim before on this show about the red-green axis, refugees, immigration, and the agenda to erase America, his wonderful book. He wrote a piece at American Thinker that we're going to be talking about today. It's called When Evangelicals Become Useful Idiots for Islamism. And Jim, it's great to welcome you back. How are you?
Hey, Janet. Great to be back with you.
Thank you so much. All right. Fill people in a little bit about this dialogue and why it has proven to be so controversial. I was really in a good place because I was on vacation for the last several weeks and it kind of missed when it all kind of came on board and I was out of the loop a little bit. But fill us in. For those people who are not familiar with why this is controversial, tell us about it.
Well, you know, it's a difficult issue because obviously, there's a lot of division in this country, and especially forming a very hard line between Muslims and non-Muslims in this country. And to me, it's heading us down the path towards a lot of conflict. And I don't think it has to be, and I think it's unfortunate that it's come that way. And so a very nice sounding answer is what they call the interfaith dialogue, where Christians and Muslims and Jews and people of other faiths get together and talk about their religions and talk about their similarities, talk about their differences, and talk about, you know, why can't we just get along together? But it really isn't that. The interfaith dialogue, like so many of the projects being foisted on us these days, is a calculated strategy of the left to, under the guise of engaging in a equal dialogue about various faiths, it is actually a vehicle for Islamists to insert their supremacist narrative and for Christians and other majority religions in this country to step aside to make room. It's really like so many other things, like the Black Lives Matter movement, it has a name that seems justifiable, but when you look behind it, you just find another strategy to impose radical ideas on the United States and provoke and marginalize traditional religion, traditional culture in this country. And it's a game that the left has been playing for almost a century.
Yeah. Now, this is interesting because Dr. White is known for doing a lot of different debates with different people, especially with different imams across the world, I believe, as well as across this country. What about Yasser Qadhi? Because this is a man of particular concern for a lot of Christians. He was educated in Saudi Arabia. He has said some very uncomfortable, at least I would say beyond uncomfortable, things about denying the Holocaust. He's called Christians and Jews filthy, these sorts of things. And these have been raised in the context of why would Dr. White have a dialogue with somebody like this? What about Qadhi himself? Why should people be concerned about this being the Muslim who is doing the dialogue?
Well, I think the entire issue that came out of this after I wrote that article, I mean, immediately people came out of the woodwork to attack me and to attack the person who actually brought it up. And I added to that by talking about the interfaith dialogue. But the response, in my mind, tells you all you need to know about why Yasser Qadhi is the wrong person. He immediately flipped, I mean instantly flipped, and called us haters and bigots and Islamophobes. He didn't bother to consider any of our arguments on their merits, which to me is just like dealing with anybody from the left.
Yes.
They don't consider anything you have to say. They dismiss it out of hand and immediately go on attack.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. I mean, if you go to his Facebook site, he calls us all racists and bigots. He also has some really unsavory people that he defends and hangs out with. One of them, the most the one that I object to more than anyone and everybody's seen her recently, is Linda Sarsour.
Oh yes.
Who he defended Sister Sarsour against the racists and the bigots because she had come out and said that, you know, they should declare jihad against Trump.
Yes.
Well, she actually said a lot more than just declaring jihad against Trump. I mean, he said that she was just speaking figuratively, you know, making it a matter of commitment to fight Trump's quote-unquote bigotry, and the bigotry of people like myself who criticize them. But she went a lot further than that.
Right. And the fact that there was a picture then circulated, I believe Robert Spencer had put this out, of Yasser Qadhi appearing at the same conference where Linda Sarsour spoke, and as you mentioned, had talked about jihad being waged against the Trump administration. She's a Hamas-tied leader. She was the Women's March leader. I mean, this woman is bad news. That alone, I would say, as a Christian, why in the world would you want to do dialogue with somebody who would appear at a conference like that?
And how, if he is such a committed religious person, how would he ever want to have anything to do with a woman like that? If he really is trying to convince us that he's open-minded and he's not a hater himself, why on earth would you want to be seen with and support and defend somebody who is such an obvious hater, such an obviously polarizing, deliberately polarizing person, and someone who really gets a big kick out of, creating notoriety.
I'll tell you what, it's true. We're going to come back. Jim Simpson, my guest on Janet Mefford Today, talking about interreligious dialogue with Islamists. We'll be right back.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
I told you yesterday about Vice President Mike Pence's encouraging address before the World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians recently. Here's a bit more of what he said about the Trump administration's commitment to this problem.
The suffering of Christians in the Middle East has stirred America to act, and it brings me here today. President Trump has made it clear that America will stand by followers of Christ in this hour of need. Our administration is fully committed to bringing relief and comfort to believers, not only across the Middle East, but across the world. This president knows that terrorists will not stop until we stop them. And under President Donald Trump, we will stop them.
Protect your First Amendment rights. Speak out and tell President Trump how important religious liberty is to you and your family. Sign this powerful petition today at CapitolHillBrief.org. Again, that's CapitolHillBrief.org.
Stress is such an ingrained part of our culture these days. In fact, it's almost expected, to the point where if you're not stressed, you might feel that you're not doing enough. This is Jeannie Nigro with Unshaken. It's easy to feel stressed in our world. We go through our days saying, I'm so stressed, or you're stressing me out. But have you ever thought of stress as sin? Stress is just a socially acceptable word for fear. That's right, whenever you stress, you're believing a lie about yourself or God. And when you believe a lie, you give the enemy, the father of lies, ground in your life. So the next time you're feeling stressed, ask God to show you the lies you're believing. When you confess these to him as sin, you'll stop the enemy from gaining ground, and you'll be on your way to a stress-free life. For more on how to remain unshaken in a world that's all shook up, go to jeannienigro.com. That's JeanneNigro.com. That's jeannienigro.com.
We are back on Janet Mefford Today talking about a very important subject this hour. It is interreligious dialogue with Islamists. Not something I necessarily enjoy talking about, but it has been quite an issue of late in the last several weeks. Many, many Christian leaders and many Islamic experts have jumped in and weighed in on this controversy surrounding an interreligious dialogue that took place a few months back between Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries and Dr. Yasser Qadhi, who is affiliated as Dean of Academic Affairs at Al-Maghrib Institute. Jim Simpson, my guest who wrote about this flap at American Thinker. One of the things I was noting, this I went back to Front Page Magazine from years ago, Jim. One of the things that that site posted years ago about Al-Maghrib Institute, they said this: from the East Coast through the American heartland to the West Coast, a rapidly growing and extremely popular Islamic studies program is bringing Wahhabi extremism and Muslim Brotherhood activism into mosques and Muslim student groups throughout North America. The Al-Maghrib Institute features motivational style speakers, aggressive marketing, savvy use of the internet, and slick multimedia presentations as part of their 4 college credit courses leading to an Islamic studies degree offered at mosques in at least 13 cities. Now, I found that to be very interesting because when they're mentioning the goal is to bring Wahhabi extremism and Muslim Brotherhood activism into mosques, this catches my attention because, as you know, you well know, and I'm sure a lot of listeners know, the whole goal of the Muslim Brotherhood is stealth jihad. They're not like Al-Qaeda. They don't want to go in and bring violence to America. What they want to do is infiltrate Western civilization. Yes. What better way of infiltrating than buddying up to Christians?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, buddying up to them and at the same time diluting their message and making the message more confusing.
Yes.
And there are so many Christians today, unfortunately, who are really have such a limited, they just don't go to church enough.
Right.
And they can be persuaded or at least swayed by some of this flowery rhetoric. But as I point out in my article, Qadi reveals his utter ignorance of what it means to be a Christian right off the top.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, one of the things that has come up, I know Dr. White was none too pleased with your article and some of the people who really...
No, they're all very upset. They're all
very
angry.
Mad.
They hated me. He hated being called a useful idiot.
Yes.
But I think it was kind of like it struck a nerve because they couldn't look at anything else about it. They couldn't look at all the facts that I raised. They totally ignored all of the list, the itemized list of problems that I have with Yasser Qadi, you know, and you mentioned the Al-Maghrib Institute, you know, he personally taught the underwear bomber.
I know. Golly. Personally taught the underwear bomber. I think that you've just disqualified yourself from interfaith dialogue. Sorry.
Right. Come on. But the thing that I see is, you know, once this came out, he immediately went to the mats and started with the hater routine. And I hate that.
And I think Dr. White is of the position that he has been doing debates for a long time. His goals are noble because he says, we're just talking about our differences.
Right.
I'm not compromising the gospel. I've shared the gospel with Muslims all over the place. What reason do you have? I'm just going to ask you straight so we can let listeners know about this. What reason do you have to suspect that this particular dialogue puts someone like Dr. White into the role of the useful idiot, a man who could be used by his opponent for nefarious purposes?
Well, for example, he talks about how he's gone over the world and he has spoken in mosques in other countries, which would normally be considered a dangerous thing to do. And I know for a fact that that's true because the church that I belong to, we support Christians who proselytize to Muslims in Muslim countries, and they can't even say what countries they're in.
Right.
Let alone what they're doing, what city, what town. They can't talk about it. Everything is in code because it literally is dangerous for them. So that begs the question, if it's so dangerous for them, how does James White waltz in to these dangerous areas and get an open door invitation to a mosque to proselytize to, you know, however many Muslims are sitting in the audience and listening?
That's a good question. Why would they put up with it?
Mm-hmm. Why do they do that? What, you know, because under normal circumstances, somebody genuinely there to attempt to make converts or even to discuss the Bible is risking their life, and yet Mr. White has no problem at all. That stinks to me.
Yeah, something to look into a little more.
And the other thing that I don't like about it is who's paying for it all?
Good question.
We don't know any of these things.
Good question. I don't know.
I do know that, you know, Dr. White objected to saying that this was something that a meeting that he held in a church. And so as part of a church service, you know, that would really truly be very sacrilegious for him to bring in somebody else to proselytize to Christians. But so he raised the point that, no, this was a forum specifically for that, and there was even a fee to get in.
Not a service, right.
No. So, okay, that's fine. So are now Yasser Qadi and Dr. James White, they turned this into a profit center, going around the nation, having debates about Christianity versus Islam. I mean, I don't know. These are all questions to ask, but the one that really bothers me the most is how he manages and why they let him come in and talk. And I think, you know, cynical me, I think it's to establish what he's doing as legitimate and establish the misinformation that these people are going to be open-minded about
Yeah, no, I agree with you. What about the bigger problem? Because the headline on your article, Jim, was When Evangelicals Become Useful Idiots for Islamism. And you have examples like Pastor Bob Roberts Jr. He's at this Dallas area church. He's been engaging in dialogue with Islamists and interfaith stuff with them. We've seen this pop up from time to time. What about the bigger issue of evangelicals being played for fools? What are your concerns from a broad perspective on that particular issue?
Well, the evangelicals are becoming very actively involved in refugee resettlement.
Yes. Yep.
And refugee resettlement is a horrible thing in its current construct on a multitude of levels. It's not merely the issue of national security, although that, of course, is the first thing that comes to mind. But we are bringing in, and the other, we are paying 9 federal contractors, all run by extreme partisan leftists,
yep,
and 320 subcontractors, all run by extreme partisan leftists, paid by federal taxpayer dollars to bring in refugees by the head as part of the left's overall strategy to tear down our borders and to flood our nation with alien societies, to dilute American culture, to dilute American traditions, to dilute our political power, and to greatly improve the political power of the left.
That's the bigger story. That's right.
That, yep. And we are paying for it with taxpayer dollars, and evangelicals are getting suckered right into it, sometimes as volunteers. And I have an article at Daily Caller that lists what a volunteer has to do and how these federal contractors are getting volunteers to raise the same money that they get from the federal government to do refugee resettlement and to do all their work for them.
And it's
just simply amazing. And then there are a lot of not only evangelical, tons of Catholic churches, a lot of synagogues as well have gotten into this, because in addition to the 9 federal contractors and 320 subcontractors, all paid by the federal government to resettle refugees, there are thousands of small tax-exempts, sometimes church-based, that get their own little grants for various special programs just for refugees and other similarly situated immigrants.
Good grief. Well, that is why people need to read your book, The Red-Green Axis, because I know you and I have discussed this before. It really is a must-read because it explains the bigger agenda about immigration and the agenda to erase America. But I really appreciated your article at American Thinker, Jim Simpson, with us. Jim, thank you so very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Janet. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. God bless. And we'll be right back on Janet Meffer Today. This Janet Meffer Today podcast is sponsored by Preborn. We want to save 300 babies' lives by giving their moms free ultrasounds, and you can help. Your gift of $140 will give free ultrasounds to 5 young women. Please help by calling 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or go to preborn.com.
We'll be right back.
We're back on Janet Mefford today. Remember our summer campaign for preborn? Call 855-601-BABY, 855-601-2229, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Your love saves a life. With your gift of $140, you'll be providing 5 free ultrasounds to young women who need to choose life. We're looking to help save the lives of 300 babies. We're almost to 100 babies, so if you can call now, do so, 855-601-BABY. I want to continue the discussion that I was having just moments ago with Jim Simpson, because I want to add some of my own thoughts about what's gone on with Dr. James White and his dialogue, his interreligious dialogue that he did a few months back with Dr. Yasser Qadhi. I have a number of concerns of my own. I'm not interested in the personality aspect of this, all of the players who have jumped into the discussion online. I don't care about any of that, because I'm looking at this with very simple eyes. I'm looking at this as not being about whether or not Christians should love Muslims. I'm not looking at this as whether or not Christians should share the gospel with Muslims. It's not even about whether or not Christians should formally debate Muslims in an appropriate setting. Dr. White and I have known each other for a number of years. He's been on the radio with me multiple times. I think he's even guest hosted for me a number of times. I have great respect for him. I've had a very good relationship with him. I don't want that to change. And I'm certainly not jumping into this because I want to have another sort of flap. That's not my motivation here. What I'm concerned about is biblical truth. That's the bottom line. And I really think it's important that this issue not be clouded. It shouldn't be clouded by the personalities or the celebrity of anybody who has weighed in on this issue. I know we have to guard against that because it's really common to say, I like this guy, I don't like this guy. Therefore, I'm closing my ears to the guy I don't like, and I'm going to listen and defend the guy I do like, regardless of who we're talking about. It's a common human problem, so we have to guard against that. What this is about, and I'm going to have the chance, by the way, I had talked to Dr. James White's staff. We're going to have Dr. White on the program on Monday. He's going to be able to listen to the show today and to be able to respond to it on Monday. I thought that was only fair because we have had such a good relationship, and I think it's an important thing to allow people to defend themselves and to field questions. So that's what we'll be doing on Monday's broadcast. But for a little bit of a teaser, what this is about from my perspective is basically three things. Number one, the question is interreligious dialogue with a false teacher conducted in the manner of the White Qadhi debate ever biblically defensible? Is there any kind of biblical model or command for interreligious dialogue with false teachers in front of the assembled saints of God, whether they're in a formal church service or not? Or do we instead find a biblical model of gospel proclamation and even intentional confrontation by God's people, even the Lord himself, when there are false teachers or false doctrine involved? I think it's the latter. Now, I'm looking forward to discussing this with Dr. White and getting his take. Maybe he can come up with some examples in Scripture proving me wrong. He's definitely welcome to do that because we are all under the authority of the Word of God. But I thought of three different examples. First example is Paul at the Areopagus. People will talk about that. He interacted with the Epicureans and the Stoics, and he was speaking with Jews, and he was speaking with the Gentiles, and he was in there, and he even quoted one of their quotes. Yes, but if you read Acts 17, what Paul was doing was proclaiming the gospel without apology. Now, I am not trying to charge that Dr. White does not preach the gospel. He does. He absolutely does. But what Paul didn't do was say to the Stoics and the Epicureans, how about you lay out your philosophy and I'll lay out mine and then we'll have better community. Now, I'm not trying to be cheeky here, but that is what the stated goal was of this interreligious dialogue that took place in Mississippi between Dr. White and Dr. Qadhi. That's what he said. The goal is to get people talking to their Muslim neighbors to not fear them. Now, that's a whole nother subject. But that was never the goal of Paul. The goal of Paul was to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, to announce the rule and the reign of Jesus Christ, who is resurrected from the dead. There is no God who can compare to him. There is only one true God. That was all that Paul had to say. It was not, you do your thing, I'll do mine, and maybe the saints of God can decide who's right. I'm not trying to be cheeky. Or to misrepresent what Dr. White did and try to be funny about it. I'm really not. I'm just saying what Paul did not do as opposed to what he did. Secondly, we see Jesus in Luke where he is 12 years old and he's in the temple. He's asking questions. But again, he's 12 years old. He's talking to these teachers. They're amazed at his knowledge. And third of all, I was thinking of the example of Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Elijah confronted, didn't he? Let's see whose God is going to reign here. What he didn't do was to say, let's gather together the Israelites and let's gather together the Baal worshipers. And the Baal worship leader can explain what Baal worship is, and then I'll be able to explain who Yahweh is, and then we'll know how to have better community. No way. That's not what Elijah did. Elijah proclaimed the truth. He had a showdown. My God is greater than your God, and let me prove it. Why am I saying this? Because we always have to be confrontational? No, it isn't that. We do need to be able to dialogue with people in a personal context, but it's a different matter, I think, when you take somebody who is a false teacher, place them in front of the saints of God for any reason, and don't confront them. Don't rebuke them. I heard a little bit of the podcast that Dr. White had done talking about Jim Simpson and Jim Simpson's article and why he thought that it fell short of journalistic credibility. One of the things that he did was he rebuked Jim Simpson. Now, I wonder if he has ever rebuked Dr. Yasser Qadhi. The reason I say this is because what this ends up doing is creating a temptation that in order to want to continue dialogue, you really don't confront too much. Now, I'm sure the comeback from Dr. White will be, have you listened to every single video? Have you watched every single thing that I've ever put out? Have you read every article? Well, that would be very difficult to see everything and read everything, and I certainly haven't. I've tried to do this all. Yes, I have watched the debate, but I've tried to really prepare my own thoughts about this because I think it's important for Christians to think about it and to really to be able to discern from the Word of God what the truth is. So that's my first issue. Is interreligious dialogue with a false teacher ever biblically defensible? I don't think it is. I don't see a model for it, and I certainly don't see a command for it. Doesn't mean we don't interact with Muslims and share the gospel, but Christ has to be proclaimed. Secondly, Dr. White says he has known Dr. Yasser Qadhi for, I think, about 10 years, and I'm wondering if he's ever been aware of the shocking nature of Dr. Qadhi's radical associations, his radical statements, and his personal appearances at conferences linked to radical organizations. And if Dr. White is aware, I'm wondering why he picked this particular man as a dialogue partner. Knowing Islam, it, in my mind, is not a good enough reason when you look at the substantive information that's available about Dr. Qadhi and all of his radical ties. And thirdly, does Dr. White believe that there is any danger at all to the Christian church from civilization jihad, which is a stated goal of the Muslim Brotherhood with whom Dr. Qadhi is linked from about 18 different angles? I'm going to get into that in a little bit. Andy McCarthy, who is the federal prosecutor, I've interviewed him many times, for the 1993 World Trade Center prosecution of the Blind Sheikh, wrote some great stuff. He is an absolute expert on the Muslim Brotherhood. He writes for National Review now. And you'll remember that the FBI seized the 1991 Brotherhood memo. And this was where he got the title for his book, The Grand Jihad, How Islam and the Left Sabotage America. And the document described the work in America of the Muslim Brotherhood as, quote, a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. That is a document that the FBI uncovered, and it's just a fact. The Muslim Brotherhood has a stated goal of civilization jihad. It's why their appearances at the White House and their infiltration of the federal government was such a scandal under Obama. I argue it ought to have been a bigger scandal than it actually was, because I don't think the average American understands the danger here. The Muslim Brotherhood has been actively involved in countering what it likes to call Islamophobia and trying to create straw men and trying to shame people into shutting up their criticism and trying to suppress free speech and trying to create a form of Islamic supremacism slowly and by running for office and by having all of these associations with various people. I'm telling you what, it is a dangerous game that is being played here when we approach these things as if we are being conspiracy theorists for seeing and understanding what the Muslim Brotherhood has clearly stated in its documents. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today. More to come. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to save 300 babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
Last week, just one example of a mom who came in was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, I just can't allow this baby to be killed, with her own words.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Will you help save babies' lives? For $140, you can sponsor free ultrasounds for 5 young women. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. Or give securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not from government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty Health Share is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care, freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty Health Share and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. We're back on Janet Mefford Today. Thanks for being here. And the subject this hour is interreligious dialogue biblically defensible? And was it wise for Dr. James White, whom I greatly admire and have had a very good relationship with? I hope we can continue that after we do another show with Dr. White himself that will be airing on Monday here on Janet Mefford Today. We really need to talk about this. He had an interreligious dialogue back a few months ago in Mississippi. He appeared with Dr. Yasser Qadhi at a church, not at a church service, but in a church building in front of Christians, and also Muslims were there. And then they did another night in a mosque. And there has been a lot of controversy about this since it happened, not only because of the issue I raised before the break about interreligious dialogue, whether or not that's biblical. I don't think it is. I'm not impugning Dr. White's motives or his love for the gospel of Jesus Christ or his concern about the Muslim people coming to Christ. Don't question him on that at all. I'm just concerned about the format. And I've been a little concerned, more than a little concerned, about the aftermath. Let's talk, though, about his friend, Dr. Yasser Qadhi. There's a lot here. I'm going to play some of the quotes here. Now, you're not going to hear it in extremely long context because we don't have time. I'm not doing it to be irresponsible, but I'm just telling you ahead of time. These are some snippets of some of the things that he said so you can get a feel for the way he thinks. I'm going to play for you first some of the comments that he has made previously on homosexuality. This is cut one.
This is a part of our religion, to stone the adulterer and to chop the head off of the so many sorcerer and so many other, you know, things, and to kill, by the way, the homosexual. This is also about religion, the fiqh ruling concerning the homosexual, that he be killed. Okay? Huh? I don't know about this one, but I have heard this, but I haven't studied this in detail, but I know that his punishment is death. Okay? This is all a part of our religion. This doesn't mean we go do this in America. No, we're not allowed to do this in America, you know? But I'm saying if we had an Islamic state, we would do this.
If we had an Islamic state, we would do this. These were actually very controversial remarks, and it led to an investigation of Yasser Qadhi over in the UK. The Times of London reported back in April that the British Charity Commission asked Islamic Relief why it invited what they called a hardline Muslim preacher, that's Yasser Qadhi, to star in a fundraising tour of Britain. Hardline teacher. This is what the UK media used to describe Yasser Qadhi, a hardline. Others have called him an extremist preacher. So just, you know, food for thought. Here's another cut. This is Yasser Qadhi talking about allowing other religions to worship other gods besides Allah in the context of Islamic theology. Listen to cut two.
The Islamic State allowed them to worship other than Allah in their lands, but within their temples. They were not allowed to go public in this regard. So here we have an extremism that we see in our times of these groups, that they want to destroy anybody that doesn't agree with them. And in our religion, firstly, if you want to do this properly, you need to have authority in the land. You need to have statehood. Our Prophet ﷺ didn't begin his da'wah by destroying the idols around the Kaaba, did he? Did he begin his da'wah by destroying the idols on the Kaaba? No. When did he destroy the idols? When he conquered Mecca. After 20 years of preaching. And these guys, they want to start from this exact point when nobody will accept this from them. And then number two, they selectively apply. They don't know properly which thing to go and destroy. Our Prophet ﷺ allowed, and the Sharia allows, the freedom of worship of other religions if it is done in their own places of worship. And this is the standard position, the majority position, and also historically, this is how the Ummah has always done it.
Okay, there's that particular clip. Now I want to go to a comment that he has made on the subject of blasphemy. This is cut three.
This is the point of this chapter. How can you make fun of something that Allah has said? How can you make fun of something that the Prophet has said and did? Anyone who makes fun of it is as if he is making fun of Allah and his messenger. And we said that certain things, even ignorance is no excuse. To curse Allah and the Messenger, to make fun of Allah, to make fun of Allah's Messenger, to make fun of the Quran, ridicule the Quran, no excuse. You don't have to have knowledge for this type of stuff. Unless the man is insane, obviously. If he is sane, there is no excuse. To make fun of Allah and his Messenger, the punishment is death. You ridicule, you curse Allah and his Messenger, the punishment for that is death. And the scholars say, he who curses Allah's Messenger, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, it doesn't matter. Obviously, when we are in an Islamic state, we're not talking about America or England, okay? When we're in an Islamic state, it doesn't matter what he does after that. Even if he repents, he is going to be killed.
Okay, tough words there. Now, what about the subject of jihad? What does he think about jihad, or what was he talking about in this particular clip? He's doing some teaching, obviously, and as I said, it's not a long in-context clip because I just don't have time, but here are some other remarks that he has made in the past about jihad. Cut four.
And then he said, "Ughzu bismillah," or fight in the name of Allah, okay, in the way of Allah. So you fight, you use Allah's name, in other words, you always take help from Allah. You always say bismillah. And bismillah, when you say it, it is as if you are making a dua to Allah that give me barakah in this act of mine, help me in this act of mine, I cannot do this act without your help, O Allah. Okay? So the Prophet ﷺ is telling them, when you fight, fight in the name of Allah, in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also. Okay? Fi sabilillah, in the way of Allah. Okay? Fight those who disbelieve in Allah. And by the way, this shows you that jihad is an obligation upon the Muslims whenever there is a khalifa or an amir. Okay, jihad is an obligation whenever there's a khalifa and an amir, and the Muslim army or Muslim state is capable of doing jihad. Because the general ruling is that the Muslims will always be at physical war with the non-Muslims. Okay, the general ruling is that the Muslims will always have a physical jihad with the non-Muslims unless the situation is weak, or like we are in our times, we don't have a khalifa or Islamic state. Otherwise, jihad is going to last until the day of judgment, like the Prophet said. Okay, so this is the reputation of those modernist groups that try to downplay jihad. No, we fight literally with our swords and our guns, if you like, in our times. We fight the non-Muslims when we have the capability of doing so. When we don't have this capability, then temporarily, not a permanent thing, temporarily, we do not do jihad until that time comes back. So we fight those who disbelieve in Allah.
This is a question I would have had for Dr. Qadi. So are you saying that if there ever comes a time when the caliphate comes back, and you are able to fight with your knives and your guns, as you said in that particular clip, would you fight us? Would you take up swords? Would you take up guns against us? Because we're non-Muslims, we're infidels. Would you fight us physically? I'd like to know. I mean, why not ask? I don't know. Maybe Dr. White has asked him that. We'll get into that hopefully on Monday. One more cut. This is very interesting. What Yasser Qadi has had to say about democracy. This is cut eight.
It is not my right to legislate or your right to legislate. No Supreme Court, no system of government, no democracy where they vote. Can you believe it? A group of people coming together and voting. And the majority vote will then be the law of the land. What gives you the right to prohibit something or allow something? Who gave you this right? Are you creators? Are you all knowledgeable? Do you understand the repercussions, the implications of the laws that you're going to pass? أَفَحُكْمَ الْجَاهِلِيَّةِ يَبْغُونَ Do they wish to follow the laws of ignorance? Verily, Allah is our judge. He knows what's best for us. So we have to beware of following in this path of those people. Because unfortunately, we have many Muslims today who are influenced by this. And they'll say, okay, we'll take the laws of worship. We'll pray five times a day. We'll give the zakah. We'll go for pilgrimage. We'll fast the month of Ramadan. But as for family laws and the economic system and the punishments, I don't have to follow that. This is the modern world we live in. We're not living in the 7th century anymore. We're living in the 21st century. My dear brothers, is the Allah of the 7th century any different of the Allah of the 21st century?
There's something else you could discuss. Something else that might be worth talking about. If it is true that Islam has not changed from the 7th century, then what does that mean for us? He's also, by the way, according to a 2012 Investigative Project on Terrorism story, told one of the nation's largest Islamic conferences that the Quran destroys American capitalism. He has in the past said and done a lot of things. He's appeared at a lot of Muslim Brotherhood-linked conferences, many, many. He's also called for Islamic theocracy to replace democracy. This is also from the same story at the Investigative Project on Terrorism. There have been lots and lots of quotes. You know, cutting off the hands of thieves, he said, the one problem that will happen to this person, it will bring about a benefit to an entire nation. And we see statistics to prove it. Muslim countries that implement Islamic punishments are safer. A lot of statements like this. Now, you may just say, well, it's because he's a conservative Muslim. Right. But if you're talking about conservative Islam, there are some really horrible parts of it. Is this really something that is a matter of dialogue, or ought it to be a matter of rebuke? Let me tell you who the real God is. Not just a matter of, well, we believe this. You believe this. You believe in divine revelation. So do we. Yes. But the Christian answer to this would be our divine revelation is actually from the true God. And let me tell you why. Jesus Christ is the only mediator between God and man. Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why what you had to say on the crucifixion is an offense to a holy God. Let me explain to you why. These kinds of interactions I have no problem with. And I greatly, greatly admire a lot of Dr. White's work. This is not personal for me. And I'm really excited that I'm going to have the opportunity to talk to him about some of these things. This is not small stuff, church. Not when so much is at stake. And I mean, from a Christian perspective and for the future of our country, we just cannot put the blinders on and pretend that we're all going to sing Kumbaya, talk about commonalities and differences, and we'll all be friends. Think we need to have a little bit more wisdom. All right, we'll be back next time. Thanks for joining us here on Janet Meffer Today.